The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, before we get into things today, I did just drop a new lyric video on ya for the new single, Just Being a Dick, off of my upcoming album, Suck My Dick. So you can check that out on my official website, katietrop.net, or on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/katietrop. You can check that out, and also the new single, I Do This For Me. I just dropped that on Friday, and gonna be dropping more and more music on you over the next couple of weeks, so get used to it. And my new album, Suck My Dick, is actually coming out on April 6th, so look out for it. Anyways, let's get into the sports. We did have a little bit more NFL news leak out over the weekend. Still not as crazy as it was last weekend, but a few things did happen over the weekend. Beginning with Justin Fields has finally been traded away from the Chicago Bears to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So the Steelers go from having essentially no quarterback at all this season to now having both Russell Wilson and Justin Fields going to be on their quarterback roster. It looks like right now Russell Wilson's going to start the season off as a starter, but if he ends up sucking, you just pull him out of there and put in Fields and see what you got there. But good moves by the Pittsburgh Steelers right there at the quarterback position, because they're pretty much getting two guys for not a lot of money right now. So they get to at least experiment, see if one of them sticks. And if they don't, move on next year. But I'm sure they're crossing their fingers and hoping that one of them's going to stick. Then also offensive lineman Tyron Smith, he ended up signing with the New York Jets over the weekend. He's a Dallas Cowboys lineman. I've really enjoyed the guy, his career. He's one of the top linemen in the game. But also, on the downside for him is that he's been injured the last couple of seasons, and that's been a big deal. So it is a big deal that the Cowboys did not re-sign him, it's not really that major, just because, I mean, he's just been injured. Love the dude, but he's on the end of his career at this point. So you got to move on at some point, and it looks like the Cowboys did, and he has moved on to the New York Jets. And then Jimmy Garoppolo, he was actually released from the Las Vegas Raiders last week, and then he ended up signing with the Los Angeles Rams this weekend. So it looks like he's going to be backing up Matthew Stafford, which I think is a good move. They're kind of similar quarterbacks. Obviously, Stafford could move a little bit more than Jimmy G, but they're similar style in quarterbacks. And so if Stafford ends up getting injured, hey, at least you got Jimmy G there. And we'll see what happens there. And then last but not least, we had us another retirement. Unfortunately, this is also not shocking news to me, but Leighton Van Der Esch, he's been a linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys now for the last, 7, 8 years. And unfortunately, he had to retire today due to he's had a couple of neck injuries over the last couple of seasons, and that just usually just does it for you. Unfortunately, that's nothing new though for Cowboys linebackers. We've had a few over the years have to retire and really essentially end their seasons a bit earlier than you would expect. I mean, Van Der Esch is only in his, like I said, eighth season, and so that's not really that long. He was a workhorse. He was exceptionally consistent. I enjoyed the dude's career. Really, the only negative thing you could say about the dude is he was injured. That was it. But that's not on him, and that's just the way the game goes. But thank you for all the years that you gave to the Cowboys. I respected you. I enjoyed your career, and it's too bad we couldn't get you a Super Bowl ring. But hey, maybe you move on to coaching or whatever it is you do in your post-NFL career. I wish you luck, and thanks for all you did for the Dallas Cowboys organization. Now, moving on to March Madness, bitches. Bracket time. I got my bracket all ready to go. Who am I picking for my national champion? I mean, obviously, we have about 3 weeks to go until we get there, but I'm sure all of y'all got your bracket ready to go. I had mine ready immediately as soon as I was able to get it going last night. So let's get right into it. First of all, let's talk about the number one overall seeds. In the East bracket, UConn is the number one overall seed. In the West bracket, North Carolina is the number one overall seed. In the South bracket, the South side, yeah, Houston, number one. How freaking ironic is that, by the way? The South Side, Houston. If you know, you know. You got to be a hip-hop fan to even know what the fuck I'm referencing right now. And then in the Midwest bracket, Purdue is number one overall seed. So those are our number one overall seeds. So let's get right to it. I'm just going to go truck on through basically all my picks all the way up until my national champion. So let's begin in the East bracket. We have UConn taking on Stetson. I've got UConn moving on in that matchup. Florida Atlantic versus Northwestern. I have Northwestern moving on. San Diego State versus UAB. I have San Diego State moving on. Then Auburn versus Yale. I have Auburn moving on. BYU versus Duquesne. I actually have Duquesne upsetting BYU in that one. Illinois versus Morehead State. Because I'm a child, I went ahead and picked Morehead State to upset in that one, just because Morehead. And then Washington State versus Drake. I took Washington State. And then the last in the round of 64 on the East bracket, Iowa State versus South Dakota State. I took Iowa State. Then in the round of 32 in the East bracket, I have UConn versus Northwestern. I have UConn moving on in that matchup. San Diego State versus Auburn. I have San Diego State moving on in that matchup. Duquesne versus Morehead State. I went ahead and picked Morehead State because who doesn't like Morehead? And then Washington State versus Iowa State. I picked Iowa State because I do think Iowa State, Big 12 team. I've seen this team. To me, they are going to be a silent assassin killer in this one. First of all, this East bracket is probably the most difficult bracket of them all with some really top teams in them. So I feel like whoever it goes in wins this bracket is one of the top teams because they just had to go through really good teams to get there. And Iowa State, to me, is one of the what I feel is going to be one of the best teams in March Madness. My Sweet 16 in the East bracket would be UConn versus San Diego State and Morehead State versus Iowa State. I have UConn moving on and I have Iowa State moving on. So I'll get to my Elite Eight and Final Four and all that after I do the rest of the bracket. So let's move on to the West bracket in the round of 64. We have North Carolina. Their opponent is still pending right now. As you know, we usually have games on Tuesday and Wednesday to determine the last couple of spots in here. So North Carolina is undetermined at this point, but I have them moving on regardless of who they play. Then we have Mississippi State versus Michigan State. I have Michigan State moving on. St. Mary's versus Grand Canyon. I have St. Mary's. Alabama versus Charleston. I have Alabama moving on. Clemson versus New Mexico. I have Clemson. Baylor versus Colgate. I have Baylor. Dayton versus Nevada. I have Nevada. And then Arizona versus Long Beach State. I have Arizona. So then we have North Carolina versus Michigan State. I have North Carolina moving on. St. Mary's versus Alabama. I have St. Mary's moving on. Clemson versus Baylor, I have Baylor moving on. And then Nevada versus Arizona, I have Nevada upsetting Arizona in this one. You have to pick some upsets, and so I just went ahead and picked my old hometown, Reno, Nevada, right there, and have them beating out Arizona in an upset. Then in the Sweet 16 part of the West bracket will be North Carolina versus St. Mary's. I have St. Mary's moving on, upsetting North Carolina. For some reason, I'm just looking at St. Mary's. They are a good team, and I just kind of feel like they're going to be that one random team that comes in and upsets. You know, like I said, you got to pick some upsets somewhere, so I'm going with St. Mary's there. And then we have Baylor versus Nevada, and then I have Baylor moving on in that matchup. Moving on to the South Side, yeah. We have Houston versus Longwood. unfortunately, my childish side is not taking over on the Longwood one. I'm going to go with the smart pick and go with Houston on that one, even though I was really tempted to take Longwood just because of their name. Then we have Nebraska versus Texas A&M. I have A&M moving on in that one. Wisconsin versus James Madison. I have Wisconsin moving on. Duke versus Vermont. I have Duke moving on. Texas Tech versus NC State. I have Texas Tech moving on. And then Kentucky versus Oakland. I have Kentucky moving on. Florida versus they are another one who is opponent is up in the air right now. But whoever Florida faces, I have Florida moving on. And then we have Marquette versus Western Kentucky, and I have Marquette moving on. Then the round of 32 in the South Side bracket, Houston versus Texas A&M. I have Houston moving on. Wisconsin versus Duke. I have Wisconsin upsetting Duke in that one just because Wisconsin, they are just a when it comes to March Madness, they are that team who tends to always fuck up somebody's day at some point. So I feel like they're going to fuck up Duke's day in the round of 32. Then I have Texas Tech versus Kentucky, and I have Kentucky moving on in that one because I do think Kentucky is going to be one of the top teams in the March Madness this season. Then I have Florida versus Marquette, and I have Marquette moving on. So my Sweet 16 on the South Side, yeah, I have Houston versus Wisconsin. I have Houston moving on, and then Kentucky versus Marquette. I have Kentucky moving on. So moving on to the Midwest bracket, we have Purdue, who their opponent is still up in the air right now, but whoever their opponent is, I have Purdue moving on. Then we have Utah State versus TCU. I take a TCU in that one. Gonzaga versus McNeese. I have Gonzaga. Kansas versus Samford. I have Kansas. South Carolina versus Oregon. I have South Carolina. Creighton versus Akron. I have Creighton. My Texas Longhorns actually made the tournament. Now, my hopes are not high for them. They are not high at all, but I'm fucking ecstatic they're here. And that's all you had to do was get in. But I imagine they're going to tumble here at some point. But right now, their opponent is also up in the air. We're waiting to see who wins between Virginia and Colorado State. But regardless, you know I'm going to my Texas Longhorns in this one. Spoiler alert, I am not taking the Longhorns to win the championship. I am not that stupid. I wish they were that good, but unfortunately, my Longhorns are not that good. But it's still hook 'em horns all day, motherfuckers. And then Tennessee versus St. Peter's. I have Tennessee moving on in that matchup. So my round of 32 in the Midwest bracket is Purdue versus TCU. I have Purdue moving on. Gonzaga versus Kansas. I have Gonzaga moving on. South Carolina versus Creighton. I have Creighton moving on. Creighton's another team I think is going to just shake things up during March Madness. And then Texas versus Tennessee. Unfortunately, I think my Texas Longhorns are going to fall to Tennessee. Tennessee's been having an up and down couple of weeks. So I'm kind of hoping that's what happens against the Longhorns is they play a shitty game and just magically the Longhorns are able to win. But I'm going with Tennessee in that matchup. Then I have Sweet 16 in my Midwest bracket, I have Purdue versus Gonzaga. I have Purdue moving on. And then Creighton versus Tennessee. I have Creighton moving on. So my Elite Eight looks like this. UConn versus Iowa State. I have Iowa State moving on in that matchup. Because like I said, I think Iowa State is shaking shit up in March Madness. Then I have St. Mary's versus Baylor. I am taking Baylor in that matchup. And then I have Houston versus Kentucky. I am taking Kentucky in that matchup to upset Houston. I think Houston is one of the top teams absolutely in this tournament. But for some reason, I look at Kentucky. They've got that championship pedigree. And they have been one of the hottest teams the last couple of weeks. And that's a team you don't want to fuck with going into March Madness. And so I've got Kentucky taking out Houston in the South Side bracket. And then Purdue versus Creighton, I have Purdue moving on in that matchup. So my final four is Iowa State versus Baylor and Kentucky versus Purdue. So in those matchups, Iowa State versus Baylor, I'm going Iowa State. These are two Big 12 teams, so it should be a really good matchup. Baylor has just been a really damn good team over the last couple of seasons. But Iowa State, they've been legit all season long, and there's just been something about them. They just won the Big 12 Conference Tournament, so they now have that under their belt. They just got through a tournament over the weekend. I look at Iowa State, and so I have Iowa State moving on to the national championship. Then I have Kentucky versus Purdue, and I've actually been talking about them all basketball season. I've got Purdue moving on. I think Purdue is overall the best team in college basketball. I think they play great offense. I think they play great defense. I think they've been the most consistent team all season. And, you know, over the last three-ish seasons, they've been just kind of getting further each and every year. And I feel like this is going to be their year. And so I have Purdue moving on to the national championship. So my national championship, I know this is a weird one, a random one, and I'm all about it. I got Iowa State versus Purdue, and I'm going with Purdue as my national champion. Like I said, I've been eyeballing Purdue all season long. They just have a really good roster, really good team. A lot of good players who have just been here before. They felt the losses over the last couple of seasons during March Madness. And I just look at Purdue, and I've got them winning the national championship this year. And, yeah, that's how my bracket shapes up. We'll see where we're at on Friday. I mean, of course, we'll only have a few games under our belt, but man, oh man, I am so looking forward to this weekend of college basketball because it is just, it's the best weekend of March Madness. It is games stacked on games, stacked on games, stacked on games, stacked on motherfucking games. From the second you open your eyes until the second you fucking go to sleep, it is college goddamn basketball all day, and I am here for it. So that is my national championship, Iowa State versus Purdue, and I have Purdue winning it all. But regardless of who wins, it is Hook 'em Horns, motherfucker, and that is who I'm, of course, rooting for. So let's move on to the NBA and my top 10 NBA power rankings for this week. We are getting closer and closer to the playoffs right now. And actually, one team has officially clinched a playoff spot, and that would be the number one team on the power rankings this week. Of course, still remains the Boston Celtics. Overall record of 53-14, so they have hit that 50-win mark. They are 8-2 in their last 10 games. They are currently on a 5-game winning streak, trucking over everybody. And like I said, they have now officially clinched a playoff spot. They are the only team to do so far. I mean, of course, the Eastern Conference is just terrible, so it's not really that difficult. But at the same time, you got to respect what the Celtics are doing. And like I've been saying about the Celtics, really, the only concern with them is what happens during the postseason. They're great during the regular season. They've maintained their consistency and this level of play pretty much all season. They really haven't fallen off at all. So we'll see what they've got come playoff time, because they are definitely going to be there. Then at number two on my top 10 NBA power rankings, Denver Nuggets, overall record of 47-21. They are 8-2 in their last 10 games. They are playing great. They are playing championship-level basketball right now. They are playing fantastic on the offensive side of the ball. They are playing fantastic on the defensive side of the ball. It's not just Jokic now. They've got KCP going off. You've got Michael Porter Jr. going off. You've got, of course, Jamal Murray, who's just maintaining his level of craziness. And then you've got Aaron Gordon. Like, this team is poised and ready to make another run, and I would not be shocked to see the Denver Nuggets win it all. Now, they did lose a close one yesterday to the Dallas Mavericks, but still, they're playing great, and they look like they're ready to make yet another championship run. Then at number three on my top 10 NBA power rankings, the Oklahoma City Thunder, overall record of 47-20. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they got wins over the Memphis Grizzlies and the Dallas Mavericks, so and big wins too. Right now, SGA is second in points per game in the league right now. He's averaging about 31 points per game, so he's only second to Luka in the league. And this team, they look really solid. They've been probably the most consistent team all season long from start to finish. But with them, it's also what's going to happen come playoff time, because they're a young team. So usually these young teams, unfortunately, end up having a quick exit from the playoffs. So we'll see if that's what happens with them. But right now, they are playing a consistent level of basketball. Then at number four on my top 10 NBA power rankings, the New Orleans Pelicans, overall record of 41-26. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games, and this team is just stacked. They are playing so well. Zion is just, I keep saying it, he's getting better each and every week, and it's crazy because he is. And offensively, defensively, in the paint, you don't want to fuck with Zion. It's going to be very interesting to see what this Pelicans team has come playoff time, because you just really, they have so many different ways that they could beat you, and I don't think a lot of teams are going to be ready for it. You've got Zion playing great. You've got Ingram, who's also been playing great and has been able to avoid any major injuries this season. CJ McCollum having a fantastic season, and Valanciunas also having a great season. So New Orleans Pelicans, they're going to be a very, very interesting team come playoff time. As a matter of fact, I would not be shocked if they made the Western Conference Finals, because that's how overlooked I feel like a lot of other teams are, because with them, just because I feel like they match up really well against a lot of other teams, and I just feel like Zion is, he's something different, and I don't think a lot of teams can match up against Zion, and we'll see what they've got, but right now they're looking pretty solid towards the end of the season here. Then at number five on my top 10 NBA power rankings, the streakiest team in the league, but right now they are on the upside of things, and that is the Milwaukee Bucks. Overall record of 44-24. They are 7-3 in their last 10 games. Now, they have not had Giannis playing in the last few games. He's been nursing, I believe, a hamstring injury. It kind of feels like they're more just being cautious because, hey, the playoffs are right around the corner, so you want Giannis healthy. I mean, right now, Giannis, I believe, is the third leading scorer in the league, averaging about 31 points per game, so you're going to need that come playoff time. But without Giannis, Milwaukee's actually playing really well right now. They smashed Phoenix yesterday, and it was a big game. Dame's actually had a couple of really big games, and they've just really been able to step it up. Bobby Portis, he was the guy who really stepped it up in Giannis's absence yesterday, and they're still getting W's without Giannis, and they really, I feel like that's good for their confidence, especially heading into the playoffs, because they're really the only other Eastern Conference team that's right up there with the Celtics, even though they're not consistent. But if they just get going in one series, they'll take you out. So we'll see what they've got. But I feel like they're gaining a lot of confidence by getting these wins without Giannis. Then at number six on my top 10 NBA power rankings are the Minnesota Timberwolves. Overall record of 46-21. They are 6-4 in their last 10 games. They got some big wins this week against the Clippers and the Jazz. They were really, I mean, like, they weren't even close wins. They were like 20-point wins. So Minnesota, without Karl Anthony Towns, they're looking pretty solid. And they're just another team. I'm waiting to see what they've got come playoff time. Then at number seven on my top 10 NBA power rankings are the Dallas Mavericks. Overall record of 39-29. They are 6-4 in their last 10 games, and they got a huge win over the Denver Nuggets yesterday. Kyrie had an amazing game-winning shot over Nikola Jokic. I mean, first of all, the size advantage. Let's start there. But there was only like 2-ish seconds left on the clock. He gets the inbound, and he freaking does basically a hook shot with his left hand, and it was beautiful. I mean, you could tell that it was going in from the second it left his hand, and it was nice. It was just a really nice shot, and it was over Jokic, too. So big shot there from Kyrie. It was actually a really solid game overall from Dallas. Luka right now leads the league in scoring, averaging about 34 points per game. So, you know, he's having a great year. But this Dallas team, there's just a lot of questions with them right now. Defensively, not that great. And beyond Luka, there really isn't a lot of consistency. While Kyrie, he had a fantastic game yesterday, had the great game winner. There's still a lot of questions with this Dallas team. And I don't know if they're going to be able to last a 7-game series against really good teams, especially against a Denver Nuggets team. Taken to the brink like that yesterday, you might be able to get like 1 or 2 wins in a 7-game series against Denver, but that's not going to last for an entire series. They'll take care of business. Then at number 8 on my top 10 NBA power rankings, it's Sacramento Kings. Overall record of 38-28. They are 5-5 in their last 10 games. They did get some big wins this week over the Milwaukee Bucks and the Los Angeles Lakers. De'Aaron Fox having a great season, averaging 27 points per game right now. And he's really leading the charge. But the thing with the Kings is they really haven't played any consistent basketball. They either blow you out of the water or they get blown out of the water. And they're losing to terrible teams, but beating good teams. Like I said, they beat Milwaukee and the Lakers this week. And they weren't even close games either. They were huge games by huge point margins for the Kings. But when they play shitty teams, all of a sudden you're like, what is going on with you? So the Kings, they're a weird team. I haven't really bought into them at all. Just meaning when it comes to the postseason, I don't really believe in them. They might fuck up somebody's day. They might get a series win, but overall, I don't look at them and go, oh, this is a championship level team. Then number 9 on my top 10 NBA power rankings is the Los Angeles Clippers. Overall record of 42-25. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games, and this team is really just starting to fall apart at the wrong time of the season too. They actually lost 3 out of their 4 games last week, and they just have not looked good at all lately. And like I said, this is not the time of season that you want to be falling apart. They do still lead their division slightly. We'll see how much longer that lasts, but right now the Clippers are starting to fall apart, and it was actually difficult for me to put them in the top 10 this week, but that's how shaky the rest of the league is. I mean, once you get past Dallas, really, hell, once you get past Minnesota, because Dallas is shaky on many levels too, but I mean, really the only teams that I look at that are even have deep rosters and that I look at and go, could actually make some noise is everybody from 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Boston, Denver, Oklahoma City, Pelicans, Milwaukee, and Minnesota. Because everybody else to me is just so shaky. They're not consistent. Most of these teams don't play defense. And but the Clippers, they're really falling apart at the wrong time of the season. And like I said, I can't buy into the Clippers until they actually do something. And I still have yet to buy into the Clippers. And then rounding out the top 10 NBA power rankings this week, I have the Phoenix Suns. Overall record of 39-29. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. They look great when they can score a lot of points, but it's the defense that's their huge problem as well. You know, Durant's averaging 28 points per game. Booker's averaging 27 points per game. And Beal's averaging 19 points per game. So you got these dudes averaging a lot of points per game, and they can outscore your ass. But if they play a good-ass team, it's going to be really difficult to actually see them get past somebody to actually win a championship. I mean, I feel like if they play a team like Denver or New Orleans, they're just going to get beat in the paint badly. Because, I mean, really, the Phoenix Suns are really just all about offense. That's what they are. They look, like I said, they look fantastic when they score you out of the building. I mean, just the other day, all three of those guys just went off for like 80 points combined, and they just murdered it. But then they got smashed yesterday. So, you know, Phoenix is just another team I look at and I go, I don't really trust them. I know they've got firepower, and Beal is back from injury. So if he is able to stay hot, that's going to be something. But I don't know. These last couple of teams in my top 10, I don't really trust. All right, and now, since baseball season is right around the corner, as a matter of fact, baseball season technically starts on Wednesday. We've got the Dodgers playing in Korea. They're going to be playing a series. I can't remember who they're playing. Are they playing the Padres? It doesn't really matter, in my opinion. I probably won't be watching it because it's technically considered the baseball season, but baseball doesn't really start until next Thursday, March 28th. But with that being said, now that baseball season's around the corner, it is now officially time for me to start making my 2024 MLB season predictions and how I think the season's going to shake out. So let's begin with the American League East and the National League East today. And let's start it off with the American League East and how I think everything's going to shape up in this division this season, beginning with the team I think that is going to win this division, and that is the Baltimore Orioles. Yes, I think they are going to build off of what they did last season, because my thing with the Orioles, last year is, you know, they built, they reminded me a lot of the Houston Astros before they started making the playoffs and winning championships consistently. When they started, you know, drafting all the guys and, you know, building this really solid roster, mostly through the draft. Then slowly bringing these guys up into the major leagues, then making a few tweaks here and there, and then finally here you are regularly making postseason runs and ultimately ending up with two championships in the end. And who knows, they're still going. And so that's the way I view the Baltimore Orioles, is they have built up this really solid core of dudes like Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson. And then you also have Jackson Holliday, who has not been called up yet, but it's looking like he's going to get called up at some point this season. If you don't know, he is Matt Holliday's son, you know, the Cardinals legend, basically. That's his son. So he's looking like a fantastic prospect right now, but it's looking at some point he's going to come up in the league. But with Baltimore, they've got not only these solid young guys, but they also have some really stout veterans mixed in. They've got probably one of the best batting orders in the league. It's just their pitching. What do we know about their pitching? Because their pitching was actually really solid last year. But I don't know. Is it going to remain that way? Well, they did trade for Corbin Burnes, and he's one of the top pitchers in the league, at least right now he is. So he's definitely going to provide them with a solid ace right there. Then they also picked up Craig Kimbrell at the closer position. So I feel like from starting pitching to their relief pitching to their defense and all the way through their batting order, this team is going to be really, really difficult to beat. They were solid last year. They did lay an egg in the playoffs, but I kind of felt like they were too young to really start making a run. But I feel like last year was the beginning of what we're going to see from the Baltimore Orioles. And so I actually had the Baltimore Orioles winning the AL East. And I actually think they're going to make a pretty deep run into the playoffs this year. We'll get to that next week when we start talking the MLB playoffs and my predictions on who I think is going to win everything. But I have really high hopes for the Baltimore Orioles this season. Then I have in the American League East finishing in second place, the Toronto Blue Jays. I think this is another team where they've been slowly building, slowly adding guys through free agency, also building through their farm system, drafting guys, bringing guys up here and there. This is another team that I feel like is just getting ready to go further than they have last season. You know, they've got Vladimir Guerrero, Bo Bichette, two solid guys who have been very consistent since they hit the major leagues. And you got Kevin Gausman, who's also been huge for this team since they picked him up. Another big player I think that's going to be huge that they picked up in free agency this past offseason is Justin Turner. He's been a journeyman over the last couple of seasons. You know, he started off in with Dodgers, and he was very consistent with them. Then went over to the Red Sox last year, I believe. And then now he signed with the Blue Jays in the offseason. He's going to be taking over the DH role, but I just kind of feel like he's that savvy vet who's going to come in and help this team accelerate and move to the next level. Then finishing in third place in the AL East, I have the New York Yankees. The Yankees, for me, at first, I was really wavering on them because they've got a fantastic roster. You know, they just added in Juan Soto in the offseason, and he's going to be playing for a contract season. So usually in a contract year, if you are a contract player, one of the top players in the league, I expect Soto to have a great year. And so offensively, I'm really expecting a lot from the Yankees. I think Judge is going to have another fantastic year. They signed Verdugo in the offseason, so that's another bat. But my problem with the Yankees, it's already started, and that is their injuries. Over the years, their injuries have just continued to kill them, and they're already beginning in spring training. Their ace pitcher, Gerrit Cole, he is injured already, and he's going to miss. It looks like he's going to be missing the next month. And he did avoid surgery, so that's a good thing. But he's already started off the season injured. And he's their ace. Because the big question mark for the Yankees is their starting pitching. They did pick up Stroman in the offseason via free agency. But he's a streaky type pitcher. He's got his good moments, but he's also got his bad moments. So with the Yankees, I'm just not sold on them. I think they have the firepower to make a run. I think they have the firepower to actually be a championship level team. But starting off the season already before it begins with all these injuries kind of shapes up to be another season where we're talking about all the injuries with the New York Yankees again. And so the Yankees, I have them finishing in third place this season. I actually have them struggling for the majority of the season. I don't think they're going to have issues scoring runs. I think they're going to have issues stopping other teams from scoring runs with their pitching. Because also, their bullpen is slightly questionable as well. Their starting pitching, some of these guys, you know, like Rodon, he's a beast. But he didn't do shit last year, and he's coming off of an injury. So is this a guy who's fallen off? Or is this a guy who could potentially fill in and take over the ace role while Cole heals up? Then at number four, finishing in fourth place in the AL East, I have the Tampa Bay Rays. It's really just because overall this team is very questionable to me. They did start the season off really hot last year as one of the best teams in the league. But I kind of feel like the only reason why they made the postseason is because of that really, really strong run they made to begin the season. But to end the season, they did not look good. They've traded away a couple of players in the offseason. They don't really, to me, have a deep starting pitching rotation. There's a lot of question marks in their relief pitchers. And there's just a lot of question marks just in general with the Tampa Bay Rays for me personally. So I don't really have them being a competitive team this year. And I have them finishing in fourth place in the American League East. And then rounding out the American League East, I have the Boston Red Sox. It's weird to say that, but when you overlook their roster, the only consistent player on this roster is Rafael Devers. Outside of that, they ain't got shit going on. This is a very, very weird Red Sox team. Not a lot, no stars. Not a lot of major hitters. No ace pitcher. I mean they do have. What's his face? Oh, God. I'm drawing a blank on the closer. Kenley Jansen. They've got Jansen at the closer role. So, but I mean, how many games are they going to win for him to close out? You know what I'm saying? So, the Red Sox, very questionable roster. Not a lot of guys on there going to make a lot of noise and just going to be probably another really down season for the Boston Red Sox. Moving on to the National League East and how I think that's going to shape up this season. First place in the National League East, I have the Atlanta Braves. To me, the Atlanta Braves, I know most people think the Dodgers are the most talented team in the league, and this is not my haterism speaking. It's just the Braves, to me, are another team that, you know, I keep talking about with the Astros and now with the Orioles, but the Braves are another team that have built this team up through their farm system, through the draft, and then have just keyed in on a few free agents here and there to help them out and be a solid team. They're coming off of one of the best regular seasons they've ever had. Ronald Acuna Jr. is coming off of his greatest season of his career. Spencer Strider is also coming off of the greatest season of his young career. So I'm expecting a lot from these two guys, especially Strider. I actually feel like Strider is going to just get better. Acuna, I don't know how he could get better, but I expect him to still play up the high level he has been playing at for his entire career. My only weakness with the Braves, like I said, I feel like they have the most talented roster, especially when it comes to hitting. This team is going to have zero issues scoring runs this season. It's their starting pitching is where I have the most questions. They have a few older guys who are prone to injuries. So I feel like that could be an area where the Braves might struggle. But just overall, I don't have a lot of worries with the Braves. As a matter of fact, like I said, I feel like they're the most talented team in the league. And I feel like they're the best team in the league. And I feel like they're going to maintain that level of greatness throughout this season. Then finishing in second place in the National League East, I have the Philadelphia Phillies. Really, nothing has changed at all with this team. And with that being said, you know, they were in the World Series two seasons ago. They made a nice little playoff run last year. But, I mean, the starting pitching is deep on this team. They locked in Wheeler and Nola. So they are going to be the workhorses at the 1 and 2 role. Then, of course, you still have Harper, Schwarber, Castellanos, Trey Turner. And Trey Turner didn't even have that great of a year last year with them. So I feel like Trey Turner is probably going to be the guy this year for the Phillies. Like I feel like we're going to be looking at him as making play after play, not only offensively, but defensively as well. I feel like this is going to be a big year for Trey Turner. But I don't think the Philadelphia Phillies have lost a step at all. And as a matter of fact, I feel like they're going to make it difficult for the Braves to win the division, but I think the Braves will still win the division. Then finishing in third place in the National League East, I have the New York Mets. The thing about the Mets is you just never know what you're going to get from them. Alonso is in a contract year. They couldn't work out a deal with him, so it's looking like regardless of whether he re-signs with the Mets next year or not, it's a contract year, and Alonso is an exceptional player, so I expect him to have a phenomenal year. You know, he's been really solid since the day he was called up for the Mets. So in a contract year, I'm expecting him to go off, and I expect him to have a solid year. But my big, big issue with the Mets is their pitching. They have signed, like, the oldest pitchers in the fucking league. These guys are not only old, but they're always injured, and that's Jose Quintana. You know, he's not a terrible pitcher, but he's always injured. Then you got Sean Manaea, another guy, not a terrible pitcher, but he's always injured. And then Luis Severino, not a terrible pitcher, but always injured. So I kind of feel like this is going to be a long year. If you're a Mets fan, they're really, I feel like they're going to score a lot of runs. They're going to do well defensively, but this pitching, I just look at the pitching and I go, I have a feeling they're going to get blown up in some of these games. Then finishing in fourth place in the NL East, I have the Miami Marlins. They're the Marlins. What else can I say about them? They did sign Tim Anderson in the offseason, so I think that provides them a little bit of extra on the defensive side of things. But I mean, really, they're the Marlins, and until they actually do something, can't really get excited about him. They do have Jazz Chisholm, but honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if we see Jazz Chisholm get traded at some point because this team's so terrible, and that's usually what they do with their really solid, good players is that they just end up sending them somewhere else. And so I wouldn't be shocked to see at some point midseason maybe Jazz Chisholm get traded to a decent team at some point. And then rounding out the NL East, I have the Washington Nationals. I looked over this roster, and I'm not even going to lie to you. I couldn't name a player on that team. I don't know who the fuck their team is. I don't know what this team is. I don't know if they have good players. They seem like a bunch of chump squad players. So I'm actually expecting the Washington Nationals to be one of the worst teams in the league. And by that, I mean it's probably going to be a couple of months until they get to like 10 wins. That's how terrible I think this team's going to be. So if you're a Washington Nationals fan, don't expect much from your team this season. So that's how I believe the American League East and the National League East divisions are going to shake up. So on Friday, we will go over the AL and NL Central teams and see what my predictions are going to be for the rest of the MLB season. So enjoy the rest of the week of sports, and it is March Madness, y'all. It is March Madness, so get ready for the insane level of sports we have coming our way throughout the rest of this week and all through the weekend. So I will talk to you fools on Friday, and of course, hook 'em horns, motherfuckers.